What happens when you hand the keys of your production-grade Power BI semantic model to an autonomous AI and it just decides to rewrite your entire DAX library in like 5 seconds?
Yeah, you just sit there watching your commit history fill up with absolute garbage code.
Right, and you're wondering how this tool that was supposed to save you time just created, 3 days of debugging work.
Exactly, because the reality is we are moving way past the era where AI was just a glorified autocomplete offering syntax suggestions.
We really are. So today we are keeping that nightmare from becoming your reality. Welcome to the deep dive.
We are entering the realm of agentic AI, where the system has the capability to orchestrate tasks, edit files, and just fundamentally alter your workspace.
Our mission today is highly practical. We are taking a practitioner's guide to setting up an agentic AI workflow in VS Code, specifically tailored for Power BI and Microsoft Fabric developers.
And we're going to distill exactly how to actually set this up safely and effectively based on current expert guidelines.
Right, without compromising your local development environment. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by the sheer number of AI tools, or you're worried about giving an AI access to your local files, this deep dive is custom tailored for you.
Because the foundational premise of our source material today is that you can't just start blindly downloading extensions and clicking approve on every prompt you see.
You really need a rigorous mental model of how the AI interfaces with your IDE before you grant it any sort of autonomy. I'll make sure we keep things grounded in real-world logic.
And I'll be breaking down the why behind all these technical configurations.
So let's start with that interface,
yeah.
Right? Because if I open up VS Code and fire up GitHub Copilot, I am essentially just looking at a chat window.
Yeah, but the documentation insists this isn't just a generic chat box anymore. We have these distinct operational modes, ask, plan, and agent.
Why force a developer to manually toggle between different personas, though? I mean, why can't I just type, build a new sales measure, and let it figure out the rest?
Well, because an LLM at its core is still just a probabilistic text engine. If you give it a complex prompt without establishing boundaries, it will immediately try to hallucinate the fastest path to an output.
Oh, so it just skips the crucial logic checks.
Exactly. The UI toggle for ask, plan, and agent is a way to enforce a deterministic sequence on a totally non-deterministic system.
Hmm.
It forces the AI and you to separate context gathering from actual execution.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like building a house.
Yeah.
Ask is the architect understanding your vision, plan is drafting the blueprints, and agent is handing the tools to the construction crew.
What's fascinating here is that this separation of powers is actually a crucial safety mechanism, preventing the AI from rushing into making unwanted changes.
Walk me through that sequence then. Let's say I have this massive Power BI semantic model, and I need to implement a new calculation group for time intelligence, you know, year to date, quarter to date, that sort of thing. I start in ask mode. What is actually happening under the hood?
So in ask mode, you are essentially restricting the AI to a read-only state. It can ingest your current editor context, it can read your terminal output, but its execution capabilities are entirely disabled.
So when I say I need to add a time intelligence calculation group, the AI in ask mode isn't going to start drafting code.
Right. It is going to analyze your existing workspace and likely fire back questions. It might ask, well, I see your date table, but what is the specific naming convention you prefer for your calculation items?
So it is functioning as a sounding board. I'm feeding it context, so its token window is primed with my specific business logic.
You use this mode strictly to establish shared parameters.
But once that context is established, I am still not supposed to let it write code. The guide says the next step is plan mode.
Yes.
If the AI already understands the requirements from the ask phase,
mm-hmm.
What is the technical value of creating a separate planning phase?
The value lies in surfacing hidden assumptions before they become destructive file edits.
Interesting.
When you switch to plan mode, the AI takes that shared context and generates a structured blueprint of the exact actions it intends to take.
So in my calculation group scenario, what would that look like?
The plan might state, step one, locate the model.tmdl file. Step two, create a new folder for calculation groups. Step three, write the DAX for the year-to-date item.
Oh, wow. So it is outputting a dry run of the logic tree?
Precisely. And this is where you catch the catastrophic errors. You might read that plan and realize the AI intends to modify an active relationship that will completely break your row-level security.
Ooh.
Because no files have been touched yet, you simply correct the plan right there in the chat. It acts as an incredibly cheap validation loop.
Only after that validation loop do we move to the final toggle, which is agent mode.
Right.
This is where the actual execution happens. But this is a part that historically confuses a lot of developers. A large language model is sitting on a server somewhere generating text. How does a text prediction model suddenly gain the mechanical ability to navigate my local file system?
That is the crucial architectural question. An LLM on its own cannot touch your files. It needs a translator. Think of the LLM as an operating system that knows it wants to print a document, but it has absolutely no idea how to talk to your specific hardware. It needs a printer driver.
Well, like that.
In the world of agentic AI, that driver is called an MCP server.
MCP meaning Model Context Protocol?
Yes. The Model Context Protocol is an open standard that allows AI models to securely connect to local data sources and tools.
So when you switch Copilot into agent mode,
it is now authorized to send JSON formatted requests to an active MCP server running locally on your machine.
Got it. So in the context of Power BI, we're talking about the Power BI modeling MCP server.
That is the specific tool, yeah. That local MCP server contains specialized logic. It knows exactly how to parse a complex TMDL folder structure. It knows how to validate DAX syntax.
So the LLM says, hey, MCP, here is the text for a new measure. And the MCP server translates that text into the actual local file operations required to update your semantic model. That makes the separation of powers incredibly clear. Ask builds the context, Plan drafts the logic tree, and Agent finally hands the instructions over to the MCP server to execute the changes.
Right.
But that naturally leads to the next major hurdle in the documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we getting these MCP servers? Because the source material details a pretty sharp divide between grabbing them from the VS Code marketplace versus setting them up externally.
Yeah, there is a significant divergence in the user experience here. The marketplace route is designed for immediate, friction-free adoption.
So if you want the official Microsoft Fabric tools or the standard Power BI modeling MCP, you just open the extensions pane in VS Code, click install, and the IDE handles everything.
Exactly. The extension manages its own background processes, updates automatically, and natively integrates with your editor's authentication tokens.
That sounds like the obvious choice for 99% of development work.
It is.
But the guide spends a considerable amount of time explaining how to bypass the marketplace entirely. It talks about cloning GitHub repositories, running package managers like NPM or pip, manually configuring environment variables.
Yeah, it's a lot more involved.
Here's where it gets really interesting, but honestly, if I'm just a Power BI developer trying to get a project done, an external server sounds like a massive headache, why not just stick to the easy button?
This raises an important question. And the rule of thumb is, if a marketplace option exists and works, start there. But you take on that external manual burden when your requirements outgrow the generic tools.
How so?
The key differentiator is extendability. A marketplace extension is a compiled black box product. You cannot change how it behaves. But an external MCP server pulled from an open source repository gives you total control over the source code.
Give me a real world scenario where a data engineer would actually need that level of control over the AI's tool set.
Well, imagine your organization has strict governance policies. And before any new DAX measure can be added to a production semantic model, it must be cross-referenced against a proprietary internal data dictionary hosted on a secure on-premise SQL server.
Okay, I see where this is going.
A generic marketplace MCP has no idea how to authenticate with your company's internal servers.
But if I have the source code for the external MCP,
then you can fork the repository. You can write a custom function within the MCP server that queries your internal SQL database, and you expose that function to the AI as a new tool.
Wow. So now, when the AI is in plan mode, it can autonomously check your internal data dictionary before it writes the DAX.
Exactly. You transition from simply consuming an AI tool to actively architecting a custom AI workflow tailored to your corporate infrastructure. Furthermore, for highly secure environments, security teams often require the ability to audit the entire dependency chain of any software touching local files.
Right. And you can only do that with external source code. Okay, I understand the value proposition for enterprise environments. But let's pause and look at the massive security implication we just introduced.
Okay.
You are telling me to pull raw, unvetted code from a GitHub repository, run it through NPM, and give it an execution pathway to my local file system via this agent mode. That sounds like a catastrophic security incident waiting to happen.
It totally does.
I mean, if that open source code has a malicious dependency or even just a fatal bug, it could wipe out my workspace.
Your hesitation is entirely justified, and it is a core focus of the source documentation. You should never, under any circumstances, install an untested external MCP server directly onto your primary daily use machine.
So what's the solution?
You must build an isolation layer. The guide mandates the use of isolated testing environments before you ever integrate a new tool into your main VS Code workspace.
It's like inviting a brilliant but unpredictable intern into your office. You don't give them the master keys to the server room on day one. You put them in a sandbox.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the guide specifically points to two solutions for Windows users, Windows Sandbox and Hyper-V virtual machines.
How do I choose between the two? Because setting up virtual machines sounds like a lot of overhead just to test a Copilot extension.
It depends on the lifecycle of your testing. Windows Sandbox is designed for ephemeral throwaway testing. It is a lightweight desktop environment that spins up in seconds.
Okay.
You can drop in the experimental MCP server, run a few prompt injections to see if it behaves erratically, and the moment you close the sandbox, the entire environment is destroyed. No remnants, no registry keys left behind. It is the ultimate quick sanity check tool.
But if it wipes everything when I close it, what happens if I am trying to evaluate a complex tool over the course of a week? Say I am comparing three different community-built semantic model tools. I don't want to reinstall VS Code and reclone repositories every single morning.
That is exactly when you absorb the overhead of setting up a Hyper-V virtual machine. A VM gives you a persistent, repeatable laboratory. You can install your testing frameworks, take a snapshot of the machine's state, and run your tests.
Right, and if an experimental MCP server corrupts the file system, you just roll the VM back to the previous snapshot.
Exactly. It provides a durable staging ground that keeps your primary host machine completely air-gapped from the experimental code.
Okay, let's say a tool passes the staging ground. I have verified the external MCP server in a VM, I trust the code, and I install it on my main machine. I am still nervous about giving an AI the ability to execute file modifications. There has to be a way to put guardrails on the agent itself.
There is.
I see a setting in the Copilot chat window called Session Target. The options are local and cloud. My instinct, if I'm worried about local security, is to push the processing to the cloud.
That is a very common misconception, but in the context of Power BI and Fabric development, selecting a cloud session target will fundamentally break your workflow. We have to separate where the LLM inference happens from where the agent execution happens. The cognitive heavy lifting, the actual AI model thinking about your prompt, is always happening in the cloud, but the session target dictates where the agent looks for its tools and its file context.
So if I set the target to cloud,
the agent spins up in a remote container. It is fantastic if you are asking it to analyze a public GitHub repository or review a pull request online.
Right.
But a remote cloud container cannot see the C drive on your laptop. It cannot see your local VS Code workspace. It cannot access the local Power BI modeling MCP server you just installed. And it certainly cannot read the TMDL files you are actively editing.
Oh, wow. Therefore, for any task involving local semantic models, the session target must explicitly be set to local.
Exactly. The local target anchors the agent's execution environment to your machine. It gives it the necessary line of sight to your local tools.
But that brings me right back to my anxiety.
Yeah.
If the agent is running locally with line of sight to my files, how do I stop it from going rogue and deleting a directory because it hallucinated a command?
You control that through the VS Code permissions architecture. In your Copilot settings, there are options for how tool calls are handled. There is an autopilot mode and a bypass approvals mode.
I've seen those.
These allow the agent to iterate and execute tool calls silently in the background without human intervention.
I am assuming the expert guidance is to avoid those settings like the plague.
When you are dealing with delicate metadata, like a Power BI semantic model, absolutely. The required setting is default approvals. This acts as a hard circuit breaker.
How does that circuit breaker function in practice? Let's go back to our agent mode scenario where it is trying to add a DAX measure to my model.
With default approvals enabled, the AI formulates the JSON payload to send to the MCP server, but the IDE intercepts it. A dialog box physically pops up on your screen showing you the exact command the AI wants to run.
Okay, so I can see what it's trying to do.
Right. It will say the agent intends to execute a file write operation to sales.tmdl. You have to manually review the syntax and click approve before the operation proceeds. The AI cannot physically bypass that human-in-the-loop validation constraint.
That is incredibly reassuring. It takes the anxiety out of the process because it turns the AI from an autonomous robot into a highly capable subordinate that still has to get a signature for every single purchase order.
It creates a perfectly secure laboratory right on your main machine. You get the immense reasoning power of the AI, the deep local integration of the MCP tools, but you retain ultimate granular authority over your file system.
We have mapped out a really robust architecture here. We are using ask and plan modes to prevent hallucinations. We are choosing external MCPs when we need deep custom integrations. We are sandboxing untested code, and we are enforcing local session targets with mandatory manual approvals.
It's a very professional grade setup.
Right. But running a professional grade setup usually implies a professional grade cost. The guide spends significant time discussing the transition from the free Copilot plan to the paid or pro tiers.
It is a critical transition point in any developer's journey with agentic AI, and it is largely about understanding the physical limitations of the underlying models.
The documentation actually points out that the free tier of GitHub Copilot is the recommended starting point for all of this. Why start there if we are trying to build a production workflow?
Because the initial learning curve has nothing to do with token limits. It has to do with behavioral modification.
You mean breaking old habits?
Yes. You need time to unlearn your old habits and train yourself to use the ask, plan, and agent sequence. You need to practice configuring local session targets and reviewing approval prompts.
So the free plan lowers the barrier to entry, allowing you to master the entire UI and orchestration layer without any financial commitment. But obviously, Microsoft is not giving away unlimited compute for free. What is the bottleneck that eventually forces a developer to pull out their credit card?
The bottleneck occurs across two dimensions, model access and context windows. On the free tier, you are generally subject to a 1x usage multiplier, and Copilot defaults to a standard, generalized model, often referred to as an auto model.
Which is perfectly fine for writing a simple Python script or a basic DAX calculation.
Right. But think about the architecture of a complex fabric environment.
Yeah, you might have dozens of related semantic models, massive data pipelines, complex row-level security roles.
Exactly. When you ask an AI to refactor an architecture of that size, you need it to hold a massive amount of context in its memory simultaneously.
So you need access to the heaviest, most advanced reasoning models available.
Yes. Models capable of complex logic chaining without losing track of the initial prompt. The free tier will throttle your access to those premium models during peak hours or cap your context window, leading to degraded, truncated responses just when you need the AI the most.
So what does this all mean? Essentially, you're using the free tier as a test drive around the neighborhood, but you need the paid tier when you're ready to commute cross-country every day.
That's a great way to put it. You upgrade your plan when the AI transitions from a neat toy that occasionally saves you 5 minutes of typing to a mission-critical infrastructure component.
Right. When a production deadline hinges on the AI's ability to seamlessly orchestrate a massive TMDL update across 20 different files, you cannot afford to hit a rate limit or rely on a lightweight model.
You pay for the guarantee of uninterrupted, high-bandwidth cognitive capacity.
It is really about buying confidence in your own tool chain. The overarching philosophy of this entire guide really seems to center on intentionality. You don't just throw AI at your code base and hope it works.
No, you methodically build trust. You verify your tools in a virtual machine. You restrict execution permissions. You strictly enforce the ask, plan, agent sequence. And you only scale up your compute resources when your local output actually demands it.
Because a small, well-understood setup is always better than a massive, automated setup you don't trust.
A narrow, deeply understood, manually approved workflow will always outperform a massive, highly automated setup that you are too afraid to actually use. If you do not understand the mechanical differences between an LLM text prediction and an MCP tool execution on the free tier, paying for the pro tier is just going to help you corrupt your semantic models faster.
You will break things at the speed of light. Well, this has been an incredibly clarifying breakdown of the mechanics involved. Let's briefly recap the architectural journey we have mapped out for you today.
Sounds good.
We started by restructuring how we communicate with the AI, moving away from generic prompts and strictly enforcing the sequential modes. Using ask to build shared context, plan to generate a safe, verifiable logic tree, and agent to finally execute the task.
And we established that the agent relies on local MCP servers acting as API translators, specifically using tools like the Power BI modeling server to bridge the gap between text generation and physical TMDL file modifications.
We weighed the zero-friction deployment of marketplace extensions against the deep, auditable extendability of manual external server installations. And we addressed the inherent security risks by isolating untrusted code in Windows sandboxes or Hyper-V virtual labs.
We also clarified the absolute necessity of using local session targets to maintain line of sight to your workspace, while rigorously enforcing default approvals to ensure no code is written without explicit human authorization.
And finally, we outlined the strategic graduation from the free tier, which is used for mastering the interface, to the paid tier, unlocking the advanced models and massive context windows required for enterprise-scale architecture.
Right.
The goal here is not immediate blind automation. The goal is to build a highly intentional, securely anchored AI ecosystem where you remain the ultimate authority.
Which leaves us with a really fascinating paradigm shift to consider.
Well, what's that?
Well, we have spent this entire deep dive detailing how to carefully orchestrate an AI, how to give it context, review its blueprints, provide it with specific drivers and tools, and manually approve its actions.
Yeah.
If this is the new standard of development, are we fundamentally changing the definition of a programmer? Perhaps the future of software engineering isn't about writing syntax at all.
Wow.
Perhaps the true technical skill of the next decade is simply becoming the systems architect and manager of a highly capable digital workforce.
Now that is something to think about the next time you open your IDE and stare at that blinking cursor. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.